your CPA mobile. How you doing? I'm getting ready to get into some noise here, but I shouldn't be in it for long. There's QRM right down the street here.
Pretty good. It's a little scratchy, but perfectly readable.
Saying I was going through a little QRM back there. I don't know what it is. Something that interferes with 2 meters.
Something down there around the concrete somewhere down in there. It kind of acts up sometimes. I think I'm not sure where it's coming from. Maybe it's a pager or something. I'm not sure that this is maybe that fire station.
I have no idea. I just know it's the same. In fact, it seems to be worse. It seems to be like it's stronger, or I'm picking it up. I'm picking it up more than I normally do, and for, you know, a longer distance on that corner right there of Baywood and Congaree, and why is that Congaree? That frontage road. Heck, I can't remember the name of it. Anyway, yeah, it's Congaree. And so anyway, and heck, who knows, it might be where I have my antenna stuck on my Forerunner now. It could be anything.
Yeah, trouble down there a bunch of times. I don't usually have my radio with me when I'm over in that area, but I don't have to go down that way today. I do have to go down toward Millennium Parkway that way. But I have noticed that area before a time or two when I had my radio, I had my handheld with me, that would try to do a little squawking or something in there. Like it's, I was in a mind or what it is. It usually, they do it all the time, though. But then again, when you got a short antenna like that, it doesn't pick up signals as well as it does with a, you know, regular mobile. So how you liking your new Forerunner?
I'm loving it. I tell you, it's really nice. And I've already made a trip up to Maggie Valley to see my sister, and it rides really good on the highway. Even it's got some pretty aggressive tires on it. They're not noisy, but if you look at them, you know, they're pretty aggressive. And it's a, you know, it's a four-wheel drive. It's got the TRD off-road package, and it's not like I'm going to be slinging any mud anytime soon, but, you know, I might drive it in the snow, that kind of thing. But anyway, I think we're going to get any snow this year.
Didn't look like it. I hope we don't get anything this late anyway. But, yeah, I tell you, those new Forerunners, those things are huge, too, compared to the old ones. It's just like a, I mean, they look like they just, and somebody, you know, made it look like they're 15-20% bigger than the early ones were. But is that one all-wheel drive, or does it have a transfer? I mean, can you slip it in out of four-wheel drive or not?
Kind of like, you know, the old-timey, if I say old-timey, you know, you can manually shift it into four-wheel drive, low or high, and but normally, it just runs in, rear wheel drive. Well, it's hard to say fast. And, in fact, I need to engage the four wheel drive. I need to read about it. There's a couple of different ways you can do it. And, I need to read about it. So, you know, if I ever need it, I don't have to, I might have to sit there and read about it while I'm stuck somewhere.
Last time I had, this was back in the early 90s, I guess, and it was one of these deals where you could engage it automatic, and you could, disengage and back it up a little bit, get it out of, had automatic locking hubs on it, and I'd change it out to regular locking hubs that you have to switch on and off yourself, because what would happen, some of the early ones, they don't do it now, I'm sure, some of the early ones, it wouldn't be four-wheel drive in reverse, it'd only be, and forward, which is not a good thing because sometimes you need to back up four-wheel drive too. The early ones were disengaged sometimes if you put them in, if you put it in reverse. That was, like I said, that was early on. Might have been even before. Might have been sometime back in the 80s when I had a, might have been a Nissan I had back in the early 80s. It was like that. But, yeah, you need to figure out how to do it. You just don't, I don't know if that thing's got some type of slip type thing. There's some of them, the ones are locking up. You didn't want to put them in four-wheel drive unless you had a little bit of, on dry pavement or anything, unless you're on sand or dirt or something like that, would slip a little bit. But I'm not sure where they, I'm sure they've engineered all the quirks out of them now. They
thing, I don't know if I can do, I can put it in four wheel drive on tape, on asphalt. You know, and I don't want to mess it up, so that's why I want to read about it before I, you know, try it. And I don't know if I need to be in park or neutral or what. And I've got a knob over my head here on the center console right behind the rearview mirror. And it's got a couple of knobs in there, switches and all kinds of stuff up there. But, and then there's a stick down here that's labeled, you know, four-wheel high, four-wheel low. And you can put your hand on it, and you can feel the vibration from the transmission. I hope that's not a bad thing. I'm sure that's the transfer case. So anyway, yeah, I'm just gonna have to read about all this.
I like a regular transfer case, which is good. SUV I had was a Subaru, which is full-time all-wheel drive, but it's got like 60 in the front and 40 in the back. The original Subarus had 90 in the front, 10 in the back. My Nissan, which is a standard four-wheel drive, the front axle and rear axle had different ratios, which is a big mess, because if you get on dry pavement, it's got to, they have to, sometimes you have to jack them up and let it unwind, which is a real pain in the butt to do. Nowadays, the ratios are, should be even front and back. But, you know, having a two-wheel, having a four-wheel drive high and low, yeah, that's definitely a transfer case. And that's what I'd want if I had a four-wheel drive.
Me too. My wife has a Highlander, and it's all-wheel drive. And so, you know, it's four-wheel drive all the time. And back, I guess in the 90s, late 90s, I had a 79 Jeep Quadratrac. I don't know if you remember those. It's just a two-door Jeep. It was huge. It was the big Jeep, you know, and it wasn't the downsized Jeep. And it had these little pop-out windows right behind the doors. And it had a big old, big old Chrysler motor in it. I can't remember the size, but it was dang. I just can't remember the size. Anyway, and it had a big old high-rise intake. Somebody had put a high-rise intake on it, a big four-barrel carburetor, and that thing ran rich as it could be. But it was full-time four-wheel drive, and I didn't realize that, and one of the front U-joint, the cluster of U-joints went bad on the back side of it, and I said, well, I'll just take it off and drive it in rear-wheel drive. Well, you can't do that. I found out that in a hurry.
Highlander is, but that Subaru we had, that thing would eat tires. It was awful. And since it's all-wheel drive, you couldn't replace one tire. You had to replace all four of them. If you had a flat, had to replace it if it was more than, say, 80% worn, or, you know, say it was like a, more than 10% worn off of it, you had to replace all four tires, which was a big deal. That was expensive. At least with a front-wheel drive car, with a four-wheel drive, you can replace You don't replace one. You can replace two if there's a lot of wear difference in the new one and the old one. But, man, that was just crazy. I mean, that thing, I saved probably when I traded that thing in, I probably saved myself. I mean, it had an odd size sitting on top of that, David. It was, they were, you know, set of tires like $1,100 or $1,200 for that thing, I believe. That's been 4 years ago.
QuadraTrack had those huge tires on it. It needed one tire, and I bought it from a used tire place on Cedar Lane for $10. And when I sold that Jeep, it had that tire on it. It still had plenty of tread on it. It did good on tires. I was amazed. And, you know, the Highlander seems to be doing well. We rotate them or have them rotated. We've got free tire rotation and oil change with Toyota Greer, where she bought it, and so we take advantage of that, and I guess when this one it only has, I think, a 2 year oil change and tire rotation, so I guess when I run out of that, I'll just do it myself, because heck, I won't even have to jack this thing up to get to the oil, to the drain plug and the oil filter.
It'd be a big deal, I wouldn't think. A lot of the new cars hold 6 quarts, and this quart, I think it holds 6 quarts, so it holds a lot more oil than the other cars did I had. But this one of those things, it's 4 years old now, and this, I only got about 45,000 miles on it, but I'm always concerned about this turbocharger and this intercooled turbo, and it's got that CVT transmission. I'm just concerned about longevity of either one of those things, but who knows, you know. I'll be 72 in March, and then I hope I outlive the car anyway.
My Mustang held 8 quarts, and it was full synthetic. This one takes full synthetic oil. I think it's just regular 5 quarts, but I don't really know for sure. But I'm pretty sure about that. But it's synthetic oil, 0-20 oil, and I tell you, those turbos. Does your turbo have a reservoir for oil, or does it get its oil from a tube from the engine?
I don't know. It's intercooled, whatever that means. I'm not that familiar with that. I had the hood up more than a half a dozen times. I'm not really sure. I'd have to be something. I think my, take it back, the Subaru had 6 quarts. This one only has 5, I think, since it's a 4-cylinder. But the turbos are so much different now than they were years ago. I had one on had a diesel turbo, one of my Volkswagens early on. And this one doesn't really kick in. It's real smooth. It doesn't have that almost nitrous oxide jolt when it kicks in like they used to have. I don't know. That's something I need to check on. I don't know whether it's fed from the engine or not.
But one thing I never understood, they put this little dinky oil line. I'm talking, it's the diameter of a fuel line, and if you know how, or no, a brake line, if you know what I'm talking about, it's not a big diameter, and they would, they'd run oil through that to cool to lubricate the bearings in the turbo. Well, people would drive the crap out of them and then shut it off hot, and that oil would literally boil in that tube, and it would eventually build up to the point where it wouldn't let any oil flow through there, and of course the turbo would lock up. It would heat the bearings up and lock up, and then you were out of turbo. And I just don't understand why they didn't put a bigger tube on those things, or cool, or have some way to cool the oil or something. You know, it just didn't make any sense to me. As a technician, I'd just sit there and shake my head, because it's common sense. I just don't understand it.
Volkswagen, I think it was an 84 Jetta, 83, 84 Jetta. It might have been, yeah, 84, I think. And it had a turbo diesel, and that was one of the common complaints of those things. The regular Rabbits and Jettas without the, that's the turbo were, you know, pretty solid cars, but one with a turbo, I didn't keep it that long. I got tired of having to deal with diesel, but that thing was like a bean. That thing was fine, but it'd leave a cloud of smoke like you wouldn't believe when a turbo kicked in. But it was a good driving car, but I remember people questioning the turbos and those things back then when they first introduced them. But I'm not that familiar with them. I just know there's a difference between an intercooled and a regular one, but I'm not sure what that means. I just didn't dig into that much because Honda doesn't even offer a other than maybe in a Civic or something like that. They don't offer a non-turbo engine in the Accord, I don't think at all now.
For CPA. Yeah, I noticed Ford, they're even putting turbos in their, you can get a pickup truck, their F-150 with a turbo in it. Ford, I think it's a Ford Banger. But anyway, it's kind of weird driving a F-150 with a four-cylinder turbo. But anyway, yeah, the intercooler is like a radiator for the air. And it's in the front, very front. It's in front of the condenser, it cools the air that goes through. Is pumping into the car, so it cools the air. The cooler the air, the denser the air. So, and that's what you want. You want density. So, you know, like in the winter, cold air makes more horsepower than hot air does. So in the wintertime, you know, it's easier to make more horsepower. But anyway, that's what the intercooler does. And some of them even, like on race cars, they put a box and they literally put ice cubes down in the box and just pack it full. And the air blows through that ice. And as they're going down the track, you know, it's good for one run, but, you know, that's all they want, you know, and get that air cold so they can make more horsepower.
Appreciate that input. That's, I didn't realize that. That makes a lot of sense. I figured you would know if anybody would. Well, what happened? What made you get rid of the Mustang? When you told me the other day that the pony had left the stable for good, I wondered what was going on.
I don't know. I'm beginning to think maybe it was a moment of stupidity. I should have just kept it. I bought this, and I had the Mustang for, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks, and tried to sell it myself on Auto Trader and on Facebook Marketplace, and yeah, I got jerked around by a few people, and because I wanted a bank, a certified check from the bank, and they wanted to pay me cash, and I just wasn't going to take cash. I have no way of knowing if it's counterfeit or not. And, you know, it's not hard to get a certified check from a bank. It takes about 5 or 10 minutes. And one guy said, you know, he wanted to buy it. He said, I don't know why you won't take cash. And I said, I've sold 6 cars in the last 2 years with cash. And I said, well, good for you.
I take cash on some small transactions like that, but, you know, but I wouldn't do it for a car or anything like that anymore because you don't know where that money came from. And, you know, these guys, not only that, they, all this tracking they're doing in the banks about these big deposits and withdrawals and all, you don't know where the money came from. And you get a lot of questions asked sometimes, and, you know, there's a lot of shady people out there on Facebook. You don't know who you're dealing with, or, you know, it may or may not be counterfeit, but it might be somebody might have a, you know, laundering operation there where they're trying to launder some drug money somewhere too. You just never know.
I wound up selling it to Carvana, and they gave me a decent price, I guess. It wasn't what I wanted, but yeah, we weren't really hurting for the money, but I was having to move it around in the driveway, yeah, we didn't have room for it. We don't have a 3-car garage. Heck, if I had a place to park it, I would have just kept the thing. Because, you know, now they're going full electric. That thing will probably just go up in price now. Everybody's going to electric cars. And, you know, 10 years from now, that car will be worth a ton of money.
You would think so. I was talking to Keith, KM4CHY, the other day, and he was telling me that Chevrolet, except I think Chevrolet only makes the Malibu and... Maybe, I guess they still make the Camaro, but they don't make any other sedans, and Ford doesn't make any, I guess, outside of the Mustang. Everything else is truck or SUVs, which is amazing to me. They just gave up that middle-sized sedan market to Nissan and Honda and Toyota, I suppose.
Definitely the car industry is going through a major change. Probably, you know, none like we've seen since the invention of the assembly line. I mean, you know, when Henry Ford started the assembly line, I mean, it's just, it's going to be interesting to see what happens in the next few years and how the power grid structure holds up and all that. And, I mean, dang, Duke Power had brownouts because of the cold weather, or what are you going to do when people start plugging in their cars? That's really going to be a problem. So, but anyway, so I guess we'll see. You know, my wife's been talking about getting a generator for the house, so I don't know. But it'll be interesting to see what happens in the next few years.
Small generator, just a small one I use to power a couple of things if we have power outage. We don't have a whole house generator. I think Tom Minzer, TR, I think he's got a whole house in a gas generator. I don't know if it runs off propane or natural gas, but they're not that expensive. But you know, the thing about gas is it works, but there's a certain point in time the power grid is down long enough, you know, they can't, you know, that gas won't be coming in either. But like if you've got a 2-day outage or a 3-day outage or something like that, they're ideal. They self start, self test. That I think Generac is a pretty popular one. The other ones too. If you get somebody to do the installation, they're not terribly expensive. I think it only takes depending on the size of the house. I think it only takes like maybe a 15 kW, maybe 20 kW, and they're not the installation is. For a while there, Deep would not sell the power. Man, you couldn't sell the power back to them, but I'm not sure if they're doing that now or not. But that was a big deal for them early on, is you could have a generator, have solar based or something like that. And you can when you generate more power than you need, you could sell the power back to them. And they weren't doing that. And I don't know if they'd do that now or not. But they're handy to have, especially if you got somebody that's. Yeah, they can't get out or has got a medical condition or something like that. They absolutely have to have the power on, you know, during that, just longer than a few hours.
Our power here in the subdivision, we're in a grid, and it goes out right over here on Tanner Road. There's a power station, and that's where it goes out. And they'll show you, Duke Power will show you the grid, and it's the same one every time. I don't know what their problem is. It's like they're putting a Band-Aid on the problem because it just keeps going out. And we're the only people affected. And just right in this area right here. And it's really frustrating because, you know, our power is underground. But big deal. I mean, that doesn't help any. So... I mean, it's nice aesthetically, but other than that, it doesn't really help. But anyway, well, yeah, we've been thinking about talking about a generator. I don't know. We'll just have to see. Well, I'm sitting here at the garage. I'm going to have to jump off the radio because I got to tilt over the antenna to get it in the garage. I got another antenna coming, but it won't be here till March. I think DX Engineering gets it on March 16th, so I'll get it sometime after that.
Good to talk to you. Glad I caught you and enjoyed the conversation as usual. And hopefully you'll get that new antenna on and solve some of your problems, or being able to get that antenna in without having to get out every time, maybe, or different location. Radio sounds great, though. I guess you still run that 2730, but it sounded good. As always, audio is great, and the signal sounds just as good as any time. Folks, you have a good afternoon. Looks nice outside for a while. I hope it didn't. I think it's supposed to rain later on today. We got to run over to pick up the grandkids here at about 3 o'clock or so. About 3:30 or so, we'll be leaving here about 3. Good talking to you as usual, David. Have a great afternoon. Talk to you again soon. KB4CVA and 4DJC.
Anyway, you have a good one. It's beautiful out here. I just finished playing tennis, and it was so nice. I tell you, I'm thinking about going for a motorcycle ride. I'm sitting here looking at my motorcycle, and the wife's gone to the beach. I mean, what the heck? But anyway, have a good one, and we'll talk to you later. And always enjoy the QSO 73s, KB4CBA, clear.